Hello, everybody.
Welcome. I'm Nina Kachadorian. I'm the viewing program curator here at the Drawing Center. Welcome to Create, Present, Preserve, which is our workshop that we hope to start to approach the complicated and interesting topic of conservation. And this was motivated by the fact that we were hanging a show last year that involved a lot of works that were unframed, works on paper, and realized that, you know, even in-house we had questions about the best way to take care of works like that. And the artists had questions about the best way to take care of works like that. And it sort of spurred a whole conversation about of conservation. And so we have brought together today three people who know a lot on this topic. In case you're not familiar with what the viewing program is, I wanted to say a few words about that. I run a program here called the Viewing Program, which is a program for emerging artists. The Drawing Center has had this program for over 30 years now. It was one of the very first initial parts of this institution. And it's a program where we keep a registry, used to be a slide registry, now we keep it online as part of a website. Artists apply to be part of this registry, and those who are accepted are then offered these one-on-one portfolio review meetings. So we look at work here, we discuss it with the artists who come in, and once or twice a year we curate these shows called selections, which are shows drawn from artists who are in this program. And this show that you are sitting in right now is one of our selections shows. So all of these works are artists who participate in our viewing program. A few of them are present here tonight. Marietta Hoferer, here in the green sweater, has done these beautiful works with tape and pencil on the wall. So you can ask her if you want to speak to an actual artist in the show. So I'd like to introduce to you our panel tonight. Johanna Hoffman, here on the end, is the chief conservator at Contemporary Conservation. And Hoffman's clients include top museums, galleries, and artists who seek her expertise in the preservation and conservation of contemporary art. Hoffman also provides guidance to museums and private collections on devaluation after damage and consultation on preservation issues. So we'll have Johanna speak first, and then we'll be followed by Donald Deli Paoli, who's the co-owner of Drummond Framing, a company that has been designing and making frames for over two decades. The shop has created frames that hang in some of the world's top museums, galleries, and private art collections. Drummond also works directly with artists in order to create specialized frames that enhance the presentation of artwork, as well as establish the context in which it is to be appreciated. And here closest to me is Aaron Zimmerman, who is the chief art handler at PPOW in Chelsea. His expertise as an art handler at galleries and museums in New York has led him to play a pivotal role in coordinating the transport, care, and installation of artwork for exhibitions. Aaron is also a practicing artist and also an artist in the viewing program, in fact, and also someone who has hung many, many of our shows here. So we work with Aaron also in-house, and he can speak to even very specific situations that have taken place in this very room. So thanks all for joining us, and thanks all for coming, and I'll just add that obligatory little reminder to turn off your cell phones. Thanks. Well, everybody will speak for about 15 minutes, and then we'll take questions.
My name is Johanna Hoffman. I have been an art conservator at Contemporary Conservation for 3.5 years now. I studied conservation in Cologne in Germany, and the company that I work for, Contemporary Conservation, is located in Chelsea, Chelsea on 22nd Street between 10th and 11th. And it was founded by Christian Scheidemann, who's our head conservator. He's here with Robert Gober. He came to New York in 2002 after about 25 years of experience in the conservation of contemporary art in Germany. And he's been working with artists, museums, galleries, collectors for many, many years. Next slide. This is our studio. Actually changes a lot depending on the artworks that are there. And this was a moment a few years back in our studio, and I chose this photo because it shows what we have to do. It's, we do have an education that is fairly scientific. So in our training, we learn about chemistry, we learn about material science, but we also have to know about art history. We have to know the intention of the artist, which is crucial to the restoration as well. And we have to use and deal with a variety of materials that can literally go from these plastic masks to this little, it's a work by Paul Tech that is an old wax sculpture. That, And because the reason why we're all here is because the materials that artists used and use today don't last forever. And this is actually something that we found in a newspaper in Germany a while back. We translated it, and it actually shows that the younger the materials get, the less long they live. And this is just for storage media, but this is, can be applied to a variety of other materials, such as plastics and synthetic materials. And the, I want to explain what we do in our studio. The I mean, we have fairly traditional media, such as oil on canvas, and then media like chocolate, blood, soap, metal, plastic, wax, anything you can see in your all-day life, artists nowadays use. And the problems that occur are unfortunately a lot of times due to handling and climate. And this, for example, is a work, I always picked details due to copyrights, but this is a work by Dirk Skreber. And this was the tear was caused by a forklift that went through the work at the airport. And this is how we had to fix it, because it was an oversized work, and we had to build a bridge so that we can actually like float on top of the work without touching it, and then fix the tear by mending the tear. And then this is some. This is the result after the treatment. This is the work by Dieter Roth. It's a chocolate piece. And this was damaged during shipment. It was actually, they had instructions to put the work flat into the plane, and they didn't follow the instructions, and so the work traveled upright and in the wrong direction, and due to vibration, the work fell apart, and it's a total loss. This is a work by Rosemary Trockel, and she did everything right, but it was stored in the wrong way, and it has a serious water damage. And a lot of times we face the problem with people handling works and then not wearing gloves at all, or wearing the wrong gloves, and that causes fingerprints, indentations, cracks. This is a fingerprint on a work by Rudolf Stingel, and it's an extremely delicate paint layer, and it cannot be cleaned, so it has to, it's really extremely hard to inpaint it, because it's a gold enamel paint that oxidizes very quickly after a few weeks and leaves these stains that cannot be removed with solvents. This is a work by Vangishi Mutu, and she works, this is a work on mylar, and she used an ink, and this is an example for the use of, I'd say, a combination of inappropriate materials, materials that don't really work together. And this just had very poor adhesion. It's only found in these red areas and needed to be consolidated. And this is one of the materials, and I think that's, this is the drawing center, and I'm well aware of the fact that it's not only drawings and works on paper that are made by the artists here in the program, but a lot of times, this is a work by Chloe Pina, and a lot of times we find that there are considerable damages with works on vellum, because vellum is the vellum that's used nowadays is actually made of cotton, and the way it's made, it's an industrial making, and it has a lot of tension in the material itself, and really reacts in a very unpredictable way to climate changes and expands, contracts. And this work here has been hinged in a way that she wanted it to be hinged. It's actually hinged with silicone all the way along the top edge. And because the material or the climate change, the material got humid, expanded, and then didn't have any way to move and started to cause these folds that can basically not be treated, because the work has a very delicate drawing with charcoal on top, and the vellum itself is extremely hard to be flattened due to all the tensions in the material itself. This here is a work by Sarah Lucas, and it's a cowboy hat made of cigarettes. And this is just a very simple example of things that an artist can or could consider before making the work or after making the work. It's the head is supposed to sit on this shoe that's made out of concrete, and the concrete shoe has really sharp edges. And it just caused the cigarette paper to tear. And so we had to consolidate the paper, and then what we did is we provided a little a hat that was inserted on top of the shoe, which you can see in the lower right picture. It's a little hat that was basically sewn to prevent the sharp edges to damage the cigarette papers. This is a detail of a work by Jonathan Miese. And here, this is an example for which is fairly rare, but he uses oil paint, and this white oil paint is a paint that contains oil that never dries. And when the climate changes, or in this case, it got warm in the owner's apartment, and it started to drip and started to run. And now I have a few examples of works by artists that actually come to our studio before they work or after they would come and would consult and find a material that they love and that they want to work with, but they find out that it's not lasting and they want to know what they can do in order to preserve it, or they would come and kind of figure the problems out after they made the work. And this, for example, is a work by Aaron Young. And it was made, it's a glass panel, it's a security glass, and then he had a motorcyclist burn a tire, like let it get hot, and then the little pieces of the rubber, due to, because they were warm and the rubber melted and got stuck on the surface of the glass. And he masked off this body shape, which is supposed to be him. And obviously the rubber pieces don't really stick to the glass forever. And so the glass is extremely heavy because he wanted to use something safe and stable. He used security glass, which is fairly heavy. And then we had to find a way of how to consolidate these rubber pieces on the surface without entirely changing the appearance of the work. And this is an older project. It's a work by Robert Gober, and he had made a bag of donuts, which you can see on the right side, and he wanted us to find a way to how to preserve the donuts. And you can see the bag of donuts that he made is actually a paper that he, it's an archival paper. He put in a tremendous amount of thought into the way he made it. And he hand cut it, and he used an appropriate glue, something that was really archival. And then he had us work on the donuts. And what we did is we extracted the fat in the donuts with acetone with this machine in the lab, and then we refilled it because he was also interested in the weight and he wanted to make sure that it not only looks right but also feels right. And so we reinserted a resin, Paraloid B72, and then he sprinkled cinnamon on top of it to make sure that it looks natural again. This is a work by Zoe Lennartz, and this is one of the examples where she lemon, bananas, peels together, and then she wanted to find a way of how to preserve those shells or these peels. And then we did quite some work. We freeze-dried bananas and peels, and then she ended up not liking the way it looked and just ended up using, this is an untreated lemon peel, but that also sometimes just helps them to know, okay, I want to go with whatever is the natural process. This is a work by Matthew Barney, and he had I don't know how many copies there actually were, but he wanted us to find a way of mounting the front page of this New York of the Time magazine onto something that's archival and that's gonna last, and we knew that he would apply wax onto it later and Vaseline, so he also was interested, or he wanted to make sure that whatever is underneath the front page doesn't shine through. And so we mounted the front page onto an archival onto an archival piece of paper, and with Biva, which is an archival conservation material, but also contain, it's called Biva 371, and it also contains microcrystalline wax, and it had to be something that was compatible to the Vaseline and the wax that he then later applied. And this is the last example. This is a work by Kelly Walker, and this is actually a print, like the red part that you can see is printed onto an Epson canvas with an Epson printer, and then the dark parts that you see is actually chocolate that he silk screened onto the surface. And he wanted to find a way of like melting the chocolate, keeping it flexible or soft, liquid enough to be able to do the silk screen process, and then make sure that it doesn't get brittle over time. And we tested a few things, and then he ended up using something that he came up with himself, which was linseed oil. Why I wanted to finish with this example is similar to the work by Zoe Lennartz. It's also very important to us to be able to provide artists with just a help, like a thought pattern, and then they can still decide whether or not they want to go with something that is more archival but just doesn't look right. So what we would always recommend is to put some thought into the way that you make your works, and without overthinking it, because it should be the creative process, but that's why we are, as a studio, that's why we specialize in contemporary art, because we want you to do the creative part, and we would do the research for you, and then you can still decide which way you want to go.
Sure. My name is Donald Deli Paoli. I'm co-owner of Drummond Framing. We've been in existence since 1986. I studied art here in New York. I am a graduate of Pratt. I have a BFA from 1980 and an MFA from Columbia University 2 years later. I began working right out of college at Drummond Framing, and then several years later, through a series of circumstances, was able to purchase the business. Maria Drummond is the person who founded the business. We decided to continue using her name all of these years. No reason to change. I'm going to really focus on the questions of what to consider when framing drawings. We can, there's the question. The next one is, what are some of the reasons we should frame an artwork at all? Sometimes we frame an artwork to be able to exhibit it. We might need to protect a drawing, a document, or an heirloom. Often works on paper if they're open to the air or attacked. Light can damage paper. Framing a work also allows us to enjoy it, to see it. Often people have works rolled up or stashed under a bed that they never get to put on the wall. So putting it in a frame is one way of getting it on the wall and being able to see it. Another reason is to reframe something that has been previously framed, where that frame is no longer functioning or is out of style. It can improve the appearance of a work intended for sale. And we do this twice a year for Sotheby's and Christie's and for many galleries who have works that have been previously framed. Next. It's important to know where the work is going to be displayed. If it's going into an exhibition, is the gallery sharing the cost of the framing? Do they have ways that they prefer to frame works? If it's going into a home or office, what is the decor? Is it lacquer and silver, or is it arts and crafts? This will affect how the work fits into the new environment. Obviously, if you have a very rustic frame placed into a polished, high-tech apartment, it might look out of place. Normally, we frame with the art first in mind, but if it's going into a home or office, that environment should be taken into consideration. It's important to know if the work's going to travel or be handled a lot. If there's going to be a lot of traffic, if it can be touched, if it's going to be packed and repacked during traveling exhibitions. Fragile finishes, such as painted or gilded, should be avoided. These are very delicate, very expensive, and most likely will return with chips and cracks and be very disappointing to the artist who just spent a lot of money to have these framed in the first place. Another way to keep costs and make sure that the exhibition has some coherence is to simplify sizes, try to eliminate varying too many sizes, finishes or colors, and frame styles. Many of us have seen regional shows where someone is showing, you know, a dozen watercolors, and every single one is framed in a different style frame from a different era, different color, nothing really gels. So it's important to try and limit the varieties so that you'll be able to focus on the work and not on the frames. And also, it's important to ask yourself if the frame is taking away from the experience of the art or is supporting the art. A frame can overpower a work. Too many large frames can dominate a room. So considering the exhibition or how it's going to be displayed will affect your choice of the frame. The next is costs. Are you working within a budget? And I assume most people are these days. Framing is expensive. The materials are expensive. The labor is expensive. Most people are surprised by what frames cost. If I was to say what to focus on first, I would emphasize working on ragboard with UV filtering, glazing, before more elaborate framing styles, because what is in contact with the artwork and what shields it is more important to the work than how it appears. It's very important not to overspend, especially because artworks might not sell at an exhibition. We've had many artists who are very excited to see their works finally framed and run up tabs into the tens of thousands of dollars and are sure that their works are going to be well received. And after the exhibition, we are left holding the bag. Things just pile up, and people don't realize that often things don't move. So it's important not to overspend, not to be overexcited by seeing your work framed. If it's all possible, consider rotating your works using standard sizes that you choose, so that you can show works in certain frames. And if those are not popular or you'd like to change them just for variety, you'll have frames already that would work. And then this makes sense. If you're selling a work, it should appeal to as wide an audience as possible. When we frame for Sotheby's and Christie's, we don't know who they're actually intended for, but we try to reach a broad market. And we pick something that is neutral, that is serious, that is not overly decorative, or would not fit in to a variety of locations. Next. When something is framed, it is changed. And many people are excited to see how their work is finished. A frame also prepares the viewer to experience the art. It almost says, get ready, here comes an artwork. It should separate the surrounding environment from the artwork. It really establishes a zone. Framing is the one area where we can put our stamp on someone else's or our own artwork. A collector might feel the frame really makes it theirs, but too often, framing choices can be too personal and really not appeal to too many others, and they become dated. They might be very trendy. We've seen many horrible frames that we're all too happy to tear off works. Whatever the frame is, it should be reversible, meaning the art should not be affected in any way. Whatever is done should be able to be undone. And that goes for works on paper, canvases, whatever. Next. Okay. Many people, when they come into our shop, ask us first, you're the expert, tell us how it should be framed. And we've had 5 seconds to look at this piece. But as it happens, most of our customers have a good idea already of what they're expecting. They're very able to articulate what it is they expect the frame to do. And we find the customers often have some of the most creative ideas that expand our repertoire and make it exciting for us. So we try to bring out from the customer what they're thinking about, what their thoughts are, and what they respond to. When choosing a frame to work with an artwork, it's important to choose profiles that might reflect something that's going on in the piece. It doesn't have to match exactly, but if a work contains many curves and is very sensuous, it would be inappropriate to use a very angular or aggressive style frame with that. So it's fine to choose framing that responds to what the work is doing. Again, I mentioned, will the installation overpower the art? If you have a series of works, consider that there is an additive effect to all of these frame members. You don't want to walk into a gallery and see frames. You prefer to see the artwork. So you should choose colors and proportions that stand back and allow the work to be seen first. I'm just mentioning the orientation within the frame. Sometimes people will frame a horizontal work in a vertical format. Sometimes we'll elongate proportions so there's wider margins on the left and right. And sometimes top and bottom, the frame might be exaggerated. But we tend to discourage really outlandish proportions or innovative ideas because they really are distracting and tend to become the subject matter of the art. So we prefer that the frame, again, take the back seat to the artwork. Another consideration is the time period from when the work was made. If it was made in the 40s, there are wonderful frames, we call them modernist style frames, that might have been used or reflect that era. But it's also sometimes exciting to frame a work by someone like de Kooning or Warhol in a Renaissance style frame where we're really considering them to be masters. So often we'll put a Picasso in a Spanish Renaissance style frame or de Kooning in a Dutch style frame, and they work wonderfully. I guess here are some examples of gilded frames. On the left we have modern styles, and this is called modern gold. Usually this style of gilding is planar, flat, linear, as compared with carved or antique gold. We can look at the next one. We have distressed finishes that intentionally are created to make it look like the frame has been sitting in someone's attic for the last 80 years. We can go on to the next. Getting on to mats and backings, we recommend the use of 100% cotton rag to support drawings and photographs as compared with boards that are not as high quality, that still may be neutral pH, but tend to shift over time. The rag boards that we use are more neutral in color and tend to fade less than brightly colored, more decorative mats. Some of the terms used in presenting artworks are a mount, where we might float an artwork without any mat. It's a contemporary, simple way of presenting art. We will overmat or bookmat a work. This has the effect of viewing the work as if through a window. It also helps support the edges of the artwork. We have a presentation called an island mat. Yeah, we can pass. I brought some samples we can just pass around. An island mat allows the work to float within a mat. It is more, it's seen more like an object where the edges of the artwork, and I'll show you some pictures, are totally visible and nothing is covered up. A sink mat, I have an example, is an over mat where we create a well to hold the artwork. The edges are captured by the top mat and pressure holds the work in place. These are all some basic formats. It's good to know some of these if you're taking something in to be framed. We also work with silk or linen to wrap the mats. We always back those with rags so that the silk or linen is not in direct contact with artwork. And behind the whole works, we use backings or stiffeners, which are also acid-free. And I've passed some various materials around: neutral pH, foam pour, coroplast, Sintra, and multi-use archival board. This is dry stuff. Anyway, here is an example of a work that is floating within a mat. This is a simple conservation style frame. It can be opened if the work needs to be serviced or if the glass needs to be cleaned. We can look at the next one. And here are various corner samples of mats: rag board, linen, silk. We even apply gold leaf to the bevels of mats to match the frame or enhance the presentation. To mount the artwork, we have several basic methods. Mostly for works on paper, we recommend mulberry paper or rice paper hinges. We use wheat starch glue, which is cooked. For works where water might be an issue and cause buckling or damage the work, we sometimes use filmoplast, which is a pressure-sensitive neutral pH tape. We use linen tape, but only for hinging the mats together or for reinforcing a hinge within the frame. We have another adhesive called Clusil G, which works wonderfully for thin works on rice paper. It's soluble in alcohol as well as water. When it's dissolved in alcohol, the adhesive, when lightly applied, does not cause the paper to buckle and dries very quickly. So it has been a lifesaver in delicate applications. And then lastly, we'll use photo corners for photographs that are presented behind a book mat. Often we'll use just three, leaving one corner off to allow the photograph to expand or contract. We can go on to the next, okay? There are a number of frames that we do carry and work with. A conservation or strip frame is a very simple frame that can be opened from the back to allow access. Welded frames can be made of steel or aluminum and finished with a braided or powder coat or painted finishes. Metal section frames, or Nielsen frames as they're sometimes called, are economical. They come in a variety of finishes. Some of the better ones mimic welded aluminum frames. And then we have a shadow box type of frame, similar to the frame I'm passing around. This allows the artwork to sit back from the glazing. It's recessed with the use of spacers or fillets, and we can make the box as deep as we need to accommodate the art. And let's see what other types of frames we have here. Acrylic or plexiglass box frames are very popular and have been for the last 30 or so years. Often we'll frame other frames within a plexi box for protection if it's going to travel. Period frames can be original or copies of styles of frames from different eras throughout the Renaissance or the 19th century or even modern era frames. Fillets, again, are the spacers that separate art from the glazing. And lastly, I have strainers. This frame that is being passed around has an example of a strainer, which holds the package together and supports the artwork. Better frames use strainers. Okay. So those are some of the parts of frames. And here is a full shot of that drawing framed. Okay. Here are some examples of welded frames versus metal section frames. The next shot. Here is a frame presented within a plexi box frame. This is a corner view of a very large frame with the work set back from the glazing with spacers or fillets. Here is a larger view of this frame. This frame actually measures 7 feet tall, 25 feet long. It weighs about half a ton, and we just completed this yesterday. It's a framed work of Hiroshi Sugimoto. It's one of his pine tree images. It's in six parts additionally. Okay. Here is a pile of strainers, waiting frames. And here are some traditional methods of joining frames. We use joinery methods like lap joints and dowels, nails, splines, which are like finger joints, or screws to put frames together. Some of the finishes that we work with on natural woods are wax, oil, shellac, polyurethane. We use rubbed or stained finishes, painted, gilded, and powder coat on welded or metal frames. Here are some of the natural finishes. We can go to the next. These are the rubbed or stained finishes on hardwoods. I should mention, we use mostly hardwoods because they do hold up better than pine or basswood, although we do use basswood for carved frames. Painted finishes can be beautiful. We can create many different effects with layering and color matching, but they are fragile and tend to scratch. They're very delicate. Gilded frames are also very interesting. We can achieve many different combinations of under colors or clay. And these are baked powder coat finishes, which are very durable, used on welded aluminum or steel frames. Okay. I think we're getting close to the end here. Glazing is extremely important and really impacts the cost of framing a lot. We recommend UV filtering glass or plexi in most instances. Black and white works, black and white photographs are less likely to fade than colorful watercolors or photographs. So we might give the okay to using glass or plexi. We also work with clear acrylic and UV filtering acrylic. And we use non-reflective glass with or without UV filtering. Many times on large works, the glass is laminated for prevention of shattering during shipping. And when it is laminated, it provides UV filtering. And lastly, we have a product called TrueView Museum Optima Acrylic, which does just about everything. It's non-reflective, shatterproof, anti-static, UV filtering, and very expensive. Things to avoid: we don't dry mount drawings. We might recommend dry mounting if it's a poster or an inexpensive map. We don't use non-glare or frosted glass because it tends to distort the image the further away you get from it. We don't use rubber cement behind drawings. We don't use household silicone, which might give off damaging vapors. We don't use PVA glue, like Elmer's glue, because it's acidic and also might become brittle over time. We don't use masking tape or scotch tape on artwork, which might pass through the art and stain work in a very short time. We never place an art, even if it has UV filtering, glazing, in intense light, and we don't put works in conditions where there is extreme changes of heat or humidity. And are we at the end here? We're at the end. Great. Okay. Thanks for your patience.
Okay, the name of my presentation is Preparing Your Artwork to Withstand Idiots and Catastrophe. Next. First, I'm going to give you an overview of what I'm going to cover, and then we're going to get right into it. One of the first things I'm going to cover is methods for wrapping art that work. then wrapping art to survive FedEx.
And that's a good one.
After that, a few things about storage. But first, why? Why should we wrap our artwork? Why should we take such extreme measures to protect our work? The answer is simple. Disaster and catastrophe are imminent, and you are surrounded by careless idiots. First part there is disaster and catastrophe are imminent. I'm going to talk about the PPOW gallery fire. In early January of this year, I came to work while we were installing the Chun Hawk show to this. There was water all over the floor. The door had been pried open. The power was out. Disaster and catastrophe had struck. Next. That's a view into our storage area where we keep all of our artwork. There was drywall all over the floor and a bunch of soot and about 3 inches of water on the ground. Next. And above us, there was a hole in the ceiling that went up to the third floor. Falling under the You Are Surrounded by Careless Idiots segment of this, some guys were working on the floor upstairs, and they had stacked up a bunch of varnish rags. And everybody knows, well, except for careless idiots, that if you do that, varnish can spontaneously combust. And that's what happened. And it caused a catastrophe. Next. The fire department came, and they threw our paintings out of the way into a pile in the middle of our storage room. And yeah, that's what it looked like. Next. This is what our storage room looked like after we cleared out the pile of paintings that the firemen left us. And I'd like to point out that not only did they throw the paintings into the middle of the room, but they stomped on them afterwards while they were hosing down the room. So it was pretty important that the stuff be wrapped. As you can see, there's water and soot on the floor. There's some water crept up on some of the paintings on the left there. We'll get back to that image later. Next. These are some works that didn't make it. At this point, this might start ending up looking like one of those slide lectures you got in high school about STDs, but this is really what will happen to your artwork if you don't wrap it correctly and protect it from catastrophe and disaster that are imminent at any second. Next. Here's one that made it. We had it wrapped in cardboard and plastic. I'm going to show you how to do this here in a second. Basically, the wrapping was water damaged, and there was soot and drywall on it, but it was okay. Once we unwrapped it, it was perfectly fine. Okay, second section of why. You are surrounded by careless idiots. Most careless idiots are employed by Federal Express. I'm always asked, why should one not use Federal Express? It's cheap. It's easy. They can get it there overnight, right? And hey, it's only like a few dollars compared to using an art shipper. There are many problems with FedEx. Next. This guy, he looks perfectly nice. He's totally kind. He takes your artwork. You've wrapped it sort of like you do a book or some sheets you're going to send your mom, whatever. And he assures you everything's going to be fine. Next. But he's really a careless idiot. And all he's doing is working. He's just getting a box. He's putting it on a truck. He's getting it to a shipping center. And he's leaving for the day. He doesn't care what's inside. This is the inside of a Federal Express distribution center. This is a normal day. This is what goes through every day. They've got sorters. Your art is in there with all that stuff. It's getting battered, bruised, and beat up. This is no joke. there's another pile up. Over here, we've got a tosser. He's throwing stuff around. On the other side, a kicker. He's just punting it where it needs to go. Next. So, Now you know why we have to wrap art. Now I'm going to show you what to do. First of all, some materials, what you need to get started. Packaging tape, I like the Italian stuff. It says made in Italy on the inside. It's hand terrible. It's waterproof. It's cheap. Next. Tape gun, Scotch brand, got it at Staples. Very cheap, easy. Cardboard, I like 4x8 sheets of single wall. That means it's one ply. It's just your average ordinary cardboard that most boxes are made out of. This is about $4 a sheet or so, so it's pretty cheap. Next. Clear plastic sheeting. I recommend 4 to 6 millimeters thick. It's not too thin, it's not too thick. It's reusable. Next. Box cutter with a sharp blade. This is the breakaway kind. And bubble wrap. 48-inch roll with the small bubbles is what I prefer. Next. Small bubbles are good. They provide good impact resistance, and they're pretty compact when you're wrapping stuff up. Next. So where to buy this stuff? I use Van Owner's Purchasing Bureau for a lot of this stuff. It's in the city. They're cheap. They've got a $100 minimum delivery order, but you know, they're quick and good. Valentine Shipping and Packaging is another good company in the city that you can use, and Pathé up in Chelsea is good as well. Otherwise, for other stuff, Staples and Office Depot are good for like knives and tape guns and things like that. Home Depot has some of this stuff, and the rest you can get at any decent hardware store or lumber yard. And if you're really tight on the budget, especially if you're a student or really poor like me, then just scavenge outside of stores for cardboard. You can tape the stuff together. It's perfectly fine. Just get a lot of tape. Okay. Okay, so here's how I wrap a piece of artwork so that it can survive idiots, disaster, and catastrophe. Roll out your plastic so it's a little bit wider than the piece. Next. Cut it with your box cutter. Next. Unfold it so that it's totally opened up there. Clear plastic comes in various lengths, usually 10 to 15 feet long. 10 foot's perfectly fine. Next. Put your artwork down in the middle of it there. Get it nice and centered and squared to the edges. Next. Fold the plastic over in the center so that it's totally covered. Get some tape and tab that so that it's nice and sealed. Next. Fold over the corners and do that. Tape it again. And that's what it looks like whenever it's got the four corners taped and the middle taped as well. And there it is with a full seal. This totally waterproofs the piece so that it can survive water and dust. I've covered every place where the plastic overlaps another piece of plastic so that nothing can get in. Next. And that's what the piece looks like from the front, totally covered in plastic. So then we're going to put a cardboard shell around it. In this case, I'm going to tape two pieces of 4x8 cardboard together using the boxing tape. Next. I used three pieces of tape, one in the middle and one on either side of that, just to give it good reinforcement so that it fuses it and waterproofs the seal. Do that on both sides. And that's what it looks like when it's all together. Next. Then I put the artwork down in the middle, square it up real nice. Cut off the corners at a right angle from the corner so that it looks like that. Next. Then you score along the edge of the artwork. Difference between scoring and cutting being scoring is not a cut all the way through, but just enough to give it a nice clean, you know, crack so that it can fold over the edge of the artwork. Next. That's what a score looks like when it's folded back. Next. And you just fold that score line up so that it can cover up the side of the artwork. Next. Then score again on the so that the cardboard on the back can cover up the back side of the artwork. And then fold that over. Next. So that it does that. You get a nice cover over the edge of the piece. And that's what the box sort of looks like laid out without the artwork in it, with the two score lines and the corners cut out. Next. There's the full deal. And the artwork back inside there, and you fold over the two edges, fold over the other two edges, and tape it up, and you've got a nice box, waterproofed on the inside, impact resistant on the outside. It will survive a fire. I can prove it. So the pros of this method are that it's waterproof. This is a durable and reusable package that you've made. It's economical, the materials are really cheap, it's easy to make and use. I just showed you in less than 5 minutes how to do it. And it's proven to be effective in protecting artwork against idiots and catastrophe. Remember these. If they were wrapped, they would have been fine. Like this, which was. Okay, so wrapping art to survive FedEx. We're going to take it up to the next level. You've got your artwork wrapped in plastic and cardboard, the way I just showed you. Get some bubble wrap out. Get a good inch thick of it. If you have to double over, do that. Next. Then you want to use a lot of tape and just tape that up as much as you can. Cover up every place where it's, you know, open to invasion from careless idiots. Here we've got the other side of it. I've reinforced the piece on the ends with some bubble wrap collars. Corners and their protection is particularly crucial when picking wrapping art for a shipment, because they're going to get dumped onto their corners a lot. So the more corner padding you can have, the better. Then you wrap it again, I should say, if you could go back, Rachel. It's underneath a piece of cardboard. Basically, you just go through the same exact process again. Wrap it in cardboard one more time after it's got the bubble wrap on it, so that it's really nice and bulletproof. Or should I say idiot-proof? So anyway, yeah, the idea is that your artwork is right there within that red bounding box, and you've got a lot of space around every edge so that it can really take a beating. You know, that might look like a lot to you, but really it's probably just enough. On this piece, I added extra bubble wrap on the corners on the outside just to give it some extra protection. Too much and too careful is always better than not enough in this case. So go crazy with the materials and make it really thick. That's the back side. It's really taped up super, super well. That's very waterproof. It's very impact resistant, and it's going to make it. And then do a test. If you, in your studio or wherever it is that you're wrapping this artwork, are comfortable picking it up and dropping it, then it's going to be okay. Okay, next. And kick it. I'm not kidding. Kick it. If you think you can kick it, this guy is not going to be a problem. Okay. And also, remember these guys. They are going to toss it. So, last thing, a few things about storage. Back to this picture again. As you can see, the work that's on the floor there on the left has water soaked cardboard around it. That was my mistake. We got caught with our pants down on this one. The artwork on the right is stored the way it should be. It's elevated. In any storage situation that you've got in your studio, in any kind of mini storage place, even in art storage warehouses, always make sure your artwork is at least under a 2x4 and that it's not directly on the ground. Because if water invades and it's elevated, then it's going to be, you know, that much better off in the end. This is our new storage racks that we built in our new temporary space. All the artwork's wrapped in cardboard and plastic. It's elevated off the ground. Even on the bottom, we've got a 2x4 down there underneath of everything. And it's all safe and sound. And if the same thing happens again, it'll be okay. And that's all I got.
Thank you all so much. It was great. I'm going to go home and wrap everything tonight. Fear has been struck into my heart. Yeah, thank you. I'm just going to ask one question of all three of you before we open this up to everybody, because I'm very curious. Basically, what the most common mistake that you see people making is, and I realize there may be several, but, you know, some of the most common in that case. In your case, Johanna, the things that people sort of really, had they thought about a tiny bit more, would have saved themselves a lot of heartache, perhaps. Or Donald, when someone comes in to frame something, you know, no frame could help the situation that they've already kind of put in play. Or, you know, Aaron, you've probably seen a whole range of things. But maybe you could each just give us sort of one really good rule of thumb, given each of your expertise, to sort of start the question and answer off with.
The most common mistake that they each see artists making, given their individual lines of work?
I must say that that's a really tough question, because we can't really consider, like, we get works in, and sometimes you would say, okay, if they would have thought about the use of material a little bit better, they could have avoided the problem, or then also, I mean, the most of the damages we get are really related to handling and shipping, not so much material-wise. But you can't really tell an artist what to use if he's really hung up on a certain material, and that's the beauty of the work as well. Then it's not really a mistake. But then you have to try to find a solution for them afterwards to maybe prepare the work a little differently in the future.
But actually already knowing that handling and shipping is where a lot of problems start, I think is very enlightening, actually. Okay.
I think our biggest observation is where people have previously framed works with inexpensive matting materials, and within a period of, say, 5 years, the acid from an inexpensive mat board will have migrated to the artwork and caused a burn mark that may have damaged the work or might need to be conserved and bleached. But it's something where they, just for a few dollars, could have avoided the burn. So that's the most common.
I guess I'd say, first of all, know your materials. The internet's full of really great advice and message forums where you can learn about different things about the materials you're interested in and what you can do to, you know, more effectively use them so that they'll, you know, last over time. And then I think my presentation spoke for itself. Just if you're wrapping and shipping something, just use way more material, like use 3 times more material than you think you need to use in order to protect it, because once it leaves your studio, it's a target, and it's going to get shot at by everything. So just be aware of that. I mean, it's no joke. I deal with this crap all the time.
Collector, the user, the final user,
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's a good question. We actually used non-reflective glass, and each sheet, the work was framed in six sections of glass. The glass was polished on the edges. It was from Schott Corporation, a German manufacturer. Each sheet of glass costs us about $1,000. So you can imagine what it is at the other end. They butt up against one another with nothing preventing them from moving, but the tolerances are so close that we get a very nice fit and beautiful results. So it's glass. A quarter inch. Yeah. Well, art supply stores, Samflax, they don't carry Bainbridge or, well, unfortunately, the boards that we use, we wrap. We actually adhere linen to rag board, so we don't buy it already installed. That requires, if you were to cut a mat, that it would cut an opening, but we actually wrap around bevels that are already cut in the mat opening. So we buy linen from fabric stores and glue it onto the board.
And what kind of glue do you use?
No, there's a fabric glue that we get from a framing supplier, and we do use jade glue, which is a buffered PVA glue.
Well, one thing certainly are gloves, and we find that they're cotton gloves that have these little plastic rubber knobs on them, and we really do not recommend them because they leave little traces, they get sticky, tacky, attract dirt. So either white cotton gloves, and if you feel you can't hold the work because they're a little slippery, then you can always use nitrile gloves, which are the blue ones, or latex gloves that can be powdered inside so that you can, that's one thing. And then you can, I mean, if you want to remove a larger work from the wall, it's certainly recommended to support it from the back with something larger, like a piece of cardboard, for example, and try to distribute the weight and the stress so that you don't have little creases or folds. And then move it on a stiffer support, even if you just temporarily secure it.
Actually, kind of a quandary on how to name them.
Question number two. All right. I go back to the 60s, so like, you know, now it's like 20 years later, I'm seeing destruction. The frame that you mentioned that is plexi on all sides, mm-hmm. I mean, forget the human frames. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, they were a disaster. And I think a lot of museums threw them out because a lot of church things end the side. And you know which ones I'm talking about?
Sure.
They were expensive. I think that was an expensive trip for everybody. So now you get the frameless kind of frame that everybody's looking for before we were all doing this. Okay? And I'm seeing them just yellow. I myself, started working with paper, pencil, and Duco, which has held up amazingly well. Okay, right now, pieces today in the show at the Museum of Modern Art. And I was amazed that it held up so well. But it made paper crumple on purpose, okay, and made it three-dimensional. And so they had to go into clear plexi boxes on either side. That was my frameless way of doing it. Today, maybe I would do it like this.
Right.
But any pressure, but those have yellowed and gotten really, those two have gotten dirty. I have solid bits. Edition, I printed his first edition in graphics, and they were in frameless frames, so there was no way to hold them away from the plexiglass. There were silk screens. I have a feeling that if I were to open them up, the silk screen would be on the front of the plexiglass.
Right.
I can tell you all the about okay, let's say I still have the paper, and I want to mount something kind of heavy onto the really good acid-free board. Mm-hmm. I'm not clear whether the 3M tape, which I was told from some student at the studio school, is the way to go. Two pieces this way, or you roll the linen tape to hold it down. In which case, of course, it comes up so you're going on the sides, but I happen to like the way that looks, but I'm not sure. You know, that's called what you would call, what would you call that?
Hinging? Are you referring to how it's secured to the board?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you have a couple questions all rolled into one.
And then somebody once told me also never ever put any tape on that is heavier than the paper itself in case it needs to be removed.
There is advice saying the hinge should not be stronger than the paper that the art is made on. In case it takes a bump or a shock, the artwork should not tear, but the hinge should tear and release first. So there is truth to using a hinge that is weaker than the paper that the art is done on. As far as hinging, hinging can be problematic. You can use your best judgment, hinge at the top only, but you might have to put additional hinges at the sides if it's a long, large piece to prevent swaying or shifting. You might have to readjust hinges if there's a lot of buckling over time in between the placement of hinges. We just don't use materials that burn through or stain through artwork, such as masking tape, Scotch tape, rubber cement. We don't even use linen tape because that adhesive tends to stain art. So we'll use wheat starch and mulberry paper, rice paper hinges. We will use filmoplast where the paper is very sensitive to moisture, and we'll do what we call a reverse T hinge. A portion goes to the mount, and the reverse portion goes to the artwork.
Yeah, that's great.
So we'll do that.
I just want to add, we had a situation with works, I think in the fall, right, at the Henderson show, where some works had fallen off their hinges. And the reason for that was actually a shipment thing, where the works had been shipped right vertically. And the works that had been horizontal in a crate made it fine. So these are kind of connected.
Mm-hmm. And, it's recommended that works on paper that are managed should be just flat to avoid
And what about the yellowing of, and that's what I see,
Plexi boxes?
Yeah.
I know early versions of acrylic have been replaced by later formulations, and I think it goes back to the more recent the technology, the more likely that it is not going to hold up over time. Plexi boxes were a new invention. I do know they have come out with better formulations of UV filtering plexi. I don't know how they're going to compare to the first wave of products, but I know there are problems. I've seen lots of damaged plexi boxes and cracked corners and all kinds of things. Acrylic, they say too, if there's a stress at any point, eventually it will crack at that point. So while they're used, they may not be the best thing over time. It might not be that there is something better.
This piece behind us here? Yeah. Well, there are a couple of very complicated pieces in the show. To make this piece, the artist Chris Now actually built an entire false wall in front of the wall that you see. Then he cuts into this wall. This is all sheetrock that's been cut out, taken out, and with a big puzzle on the floor, sanded and then put back into place. So, you know, this is a complicated sculptural work. You're looking at sheet.
How long did that take to do that?
He worked for about a week and a half. From the beginning of building the wall to the end. I see Hanser in the middle. Yes?
I would ask Aaron, what's the best way to go large drawings and store it in your studio?
I recommend the largest tube that you can comfortably store, because the less curvature you can create on the paper, the better. And buy glassine, acid-free, possible, and wrap the tube in that, and then wrap the drawing around that with glassine, basically protecting the drawing from itself. Yeah, and then wrap that in plastic and seal it up. So that's the best way. They're great. Yeah. If you can afford to use Masterpack, then use Masterpack. They have a great... Yeah. Just for people who don't know what Masterpack is, it's a really awesome company that makes prefabricated boxes that have very thick shells, foam inserts on the inside, on both sides, and then this piece in the middle that's really ingenious. It's sort of there. Secret formula. It's perforated foam that you put your artwork on and trace around it, and you tear out the middle and you set your artwork down in it so that it's encased in that foam, and then it's got a foam piece on either side. So it basically does all the work of the bubble wrap part of the packing that I showed you. It is expensive. No. I've never had a problem with a Masterpack box ever. They're perfect. I mean, they're so great, and they've got a plastic shell-lined sheeting thing that you can get in addition to just the cardboard that's totally impact-resistant. And, you just buy a box that's, larger than... They usually recommend a little bit too small for whatever your size of your artwork is. So I would just add an inch on either dimension to whatever they recommend. I gave that method because it's cheaper. Masterpack's expensive, but... Yeah, if you can afford it, do it.
Hard to, it depends on what you actually, what kind of media you used on your paper. So if you have, I'm not a paper conservator per se, I studied paintings and sculptures. We do paper, but paper conservators would recommend if you have something that is water resistant, then you can actually buffer the paper in a bath, which is a chemical process, and it exchanges basically the acidic parts to more basic ones. And that's pretty much the only way that works. These sprays would not really do much. And it's a very superficial treatment.
So even though the pH test is showing that you remove the acid,
you neutralize it for a certain period of time, and it's, but yeah. So it was not laminated.
No. This is total proper, the best print shops, everything, master edition type things.
Mm.
And the entire edition can be held on the edges. And the conclusion is that with the kind of inks that they're using these days, they can't go in those bags. They can only go in the glass scene because the air. And then actually, the only answer is this print shop, what they do.
To bleach it, basically.
And they told me to take my things out and put it in the sun. But I actually have to
return. Oh, wow. So are these the inks that you're using?
Wait, hang on. There's a question in the middle here. Sorry.
Is there a placement that you recommend on drawings?
That again really depends on what media you use. And we actually. Charcoal. I mean, there are a lot of fixatives that you can purchase that I wouldn't recommend. And to be honest with you, we haven't really found any that that you can purchase. And you really don't know what's in them. And you really we've seen so many damages that are caused by fixatives. So sometimes it's actually better to carefully handle them and not use anything on the surface. And then the we've actually made tests with spraying gelatin or funori, which is a seaweed combinations of these materials to saturate the surface and make sure that it doesn't rub off. But that's something that there's no real recipe for treatment. You have to see what kind of paper you have, how it absorbs the charcoal. As 3M does make pretty stable materials. But yeah.
We would ask the artist what their intention is. We would not do the mounting ourselves if something was to be mounted. We would send it to services that specialize in cold mounting or hot mounting, depending on the paper and the needs of the work. Yeah, occasionally artists will bring works that they just want hinged, and will use a pressure-sensitive tape or wheat starch and mulberry paper, but let them know in advance that this piece is going to curl and act wild inside the frame and do whatever it wants. So if that's the artist's intent, that's fine with us.
One thing that I just thought about, we actually have seen quite a few problems with laminations on photographs. Various problems, from bubbling to shrinkage to reactions with the adhesive that's used to laminate the works, and a reaction between the barita layer or the gelatin layer of the photograph. And we came to the conclusion there's really no way that we have ever seen that a lamination protects your work better than if you do not laminate it. I mean, we would recommend, like, if you make a work and you want to protect it and you're okay with a frame, then framing is always the better solution, or leave it untouched and make sure that nobody, no idiot, gets near it.
I actually have a question, comment to make about that, because we've had many instances. I mean, there are several instances in the show you can see right now where, you know, artists have opted to have the look of it, wanting it to be sort of unframed. I mean, in the case with Anne Lindberg's works over there, they're mounted to aluminum. And then there are other works, which Marietta's works here and Michaela's next to her, where they just wanted to sort of, you know, hang them. But I think it's such a common question, it might be helpful for people to hear about the safest way to do that, to hang a large paper work from pins and not damage the work in the process, or how to reinforce it. Or perhaps if you have seen damage come your way when this is done wrong, you know, how can one undo that damage?
We actually have a lot of works that are supposed to be hung to the wall either with nails or with staples. And the artists were always okay with it, doing it themselves in their studios, doing it numerous times in the galleries when the work was shown. But then after a while, it's so perforated, and you just can't do it over and over again. So we would reinforce the areas that the artists wanted the staples to be in, with, depending on the weight of the paper, depending on the transparency of the paper, we would reinforce it with another layer of paper, or like something more wheat starch, again, as the best adhesive, and then make sure that you have a like more stable area and thicker area where you can staple into.
Yeah, just make sure the whole package itself is, you know, with the artwork, make sure the pieces are wrapped individually, put them face to face, do the whole bubble wrap thing, you know, and just make sure the outer packaging is, you know, there's a lot of space on all sides, but yeah, you can double them up, you can triple them up, just make sure it's got, you know, kickable.
Drop kickable.
Yeah.
One more question, and I think we'll let these kind people sign off.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.